Shut up and sit down.
Welcome to the Rethinking Football Podcast, where we discuss player development with players, world-renowned scouts, professional football academy directors, coaches, and others. We will use Spain's model and compare it to other national governing bodies in other countries. At the end of each podcast, we will update our theory of change to improve player development worldwide using indicators, best practices, and our own research, along with the opinions and expertise of our guests. Larry Sunderland has been recognized as a top coach and a visionary advancing the sport of football and player development in the United States. Sunderland led the development of the first fully integrated professional soccer model in the United States. He has also implemented and directed the execution of the most extensive player development system in Major League Soccer. Sunderland is the current Portland Timbers Youth Technical Director, where he oversees all aspects of the academy and player development system, including directing the development curriculum guidelines and monitoring academy player and staff development. Prior to joining the Timbers, Sunderland served as Technical Director of the Chicago Fire PDL Program, Super 20s, and Fire Juniors Youth Club. He has been instrumental in the development of more than 50 professional players, including Chicago Fire's homegrown players Victor Pineda, Harrison Shipp, Chris Ritter, Colin Fernandez, Kellen Gully, and Patrick Duty. Sunderland is the only coach in the U.S. to win national championships at U14 USYS, U16 USSDA, U18 USSDA, and U20 USL. Sunderland's professional playing career includes the New York Express of the Major Indoor Soccer League, MISL, the Milwaukee Wave, and the Chicago Power Championship team of the National Professional Soccer League.
Welcome to Rethinking Football. My guest today is Larry Sunderland. Larry, you are in a unique position because you represent so many different perspectives for our audiences. You are a parent of a young player currently playing in Spain, and you're also an academy director for the Portland Timbers. So you understand the interests of the MLS, and you've been involved with developing players in the U.S. for a very long time. And so you understand how the academy system works in different markets and also how the national team's programs work as well. So you've built your career around working with youth and player development within the U.S. academy system. Can you tell us a bit about your experience with the U.S. academy system?
Sure, and thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you on things around player development and how we do a better job in this country. Well, first, from the academy standpoint, my start was kind of unique because I want to say it was back around 2004 that in Chicago we began what was at that time the first youth club that was associated with an MLS team, and that was the Chicago Fire Juniors. There was always a long-term plan to develop that into more and to further build out the MLS youth development models in Chicago. Anyway, we had that in mind. So when the academy system came online in 2007, we were pretty much positioned to take advantage of that with a large youth club based in the western suburbs of Chicago. We had a decent player pool. At the same time, I was also involved with the PDL program in Chicago. So really what we did is we wrapped that all up and we developed what at that time, again, was the first really player development pathway in MLS, where a player could conceivably go from wearing the Chicago Fire jersey at under 8 through an academy system into, at that time, the college ranks, come back, play PDL, and then graduate to the first team. So that's really the initial stage of my involvement in player development, and specifically with the academies and MLS.
That's great. So what can you tell us about the difference between your experiences with Chicago Fire and now with the Portland Timbers? Do you see advantages and challenges that are different between the two regions?
For sure. Two very, very different places. I think first, maybe if we start with the similarities between the two, and that, of course, would be mission, right? The mission of an MLS academy is to move players through to their first team. So if you start with that mission being the same, and potentially you can look at the methodology of coaching being the same, the methodology that maybe I had in Chicago that I brought to Portland. Those ideas are at the base of a development academy. And then you need to grow out the differentiation, I guess. And the main one would be the markets are very different. You have a large market in Chicago and a much smaller market in Portland. And when you're talking about player development, it starts with the pool of players that you have access to. So right off the bat, Chicago had a much greater player pool. So that makes it a little bit more difficult here in Portland. It's a challenge, right, that every academy director has in the various locations across the U.S. So I think your player pool, your talent pool, your size of the market is definitely different. I think there's a little bit of a difference in player mentality as you move around the country. A player that plays in New England is going to be different than a player that plays in Florida is going to be different than a player that plays in Los Angeles. And I found that to be the case with Portland and Chicago. A little bit different mentality in Chicago. Perhaps the exposure that players in Chicago get, the competition based on that player pool that players in Chicago got as they were young and growing, creates a little bit of a different mentality. I would say maybe the player in Chicago maybe is a little bit more of a grinder. Whereas in Portland, you know, we're up here in the Northwest. We're a long way from a lot of things. So I think the exposure that the players get at the youth level here is much more limited than a Chicago or a Los Angeles, which tends to develop a little bit of a different player. So we have to work to develop different areas within the players we do get into the academy. And then I think the last difference and a big difference between Chicago and Portland is just the pathway that we have for the players in the different places, right? In Portland, we're very fortunate to have the USL program, T2. And for me, that was a big draw, and I see that as a way to complete the pathway for players to come through and further develop from that 18 to 22 age group. So that's a difference maker for me between Chicago and Portland. And it provides me with greater opportunity and perhaps different objectives here than I had in Chicago.
Okay. How many of your academy players that go to the academy go to USL, make it to USL?
Well, I'm 2 years into the process, and I want to say we have... maybe a couple so far have gone through and signed USL contracts. I think it's a learning process for us. We're trying to figure it out. It's new to us. I do think we're going to be getting better. I do think you're going to be seeing more players coming through from the academy system into the USL system, and that's going to kind of be their proving ground to see if they can eventually make the jump to MLS. I know we're focused on getting our academy guys in on a regular basis with T2 in the training environment. Right now, I think we have 7 or 8 players that train on a somewhat regular basis with T2 that are academy players. So I think we're learning, right? It's like everything else. It's an evolution here. We're young in this process of developing players in this country. So each MLS academy that has the USL program is trying to figure out how they best position the USL program to use that from the development standpoint, as well as from the standpoint to assist the first team needs. So I think we're getting better at that.
So speaking of kids moving from the academy into a professional path, what do you think is, or can you tell me rather, what's the vision that you all have to get kids on that path to professionalism, and do you have any specific goals around how many I guess how many children you'd like to see move along that path to professionalism?
Well, with the Timbers, having T2, our goal is to move as many players through from the academy into that T2 environment as possible. We use both that as a training format, and then, of course, if those guys prove themselves, they can of course secure a T2 contract. As far as goals, we have some ambitious goals, right? That we'd like to see one player coming through from the academy to the first team, you know, by 2020, and I think those are ambitious goals. I think it's possible, but of course, as the league improves and the league changes and the league evolves, I think we have to continue to revisit those goals, perhaps. I tend to look at things a little bit differently, right? Because you don't know what each cycle, what each age group or each group of players that comes through an academy, you don't know what that group is going to look like. So, for instance, you know, any given year, you might have two players. You may have maybe fortunate enough to have three players go through and get a professional contract, whether it's T2 or MLS, right? But at the same time, you may have a couple cycles that are just kind of thin. So you may not get a player signed to a professional contract for a couple of years. And you know, that's the same. I think you're going to find that's going to be similar across the U.S. And, you know, to an extent, it's similar in Europe. But we have to remember that in Europe, this system, this development model has been in place, you know, over 100 years in many places. So we're so young at it, and we haven't really even had a chance to get our legs going with it yet. So I think there's a pathway in place. I think that pathway and the goals of that pathway are going to continually have to be revisited. I think MLS clubs are going to be continually evolving as far as how they look at these players, how are these players assets, and then again, what they need at the first team level. You know, if you develop seven left backs, you know, that could play professionally, you have to figure out where you place those seven left backs, how do you use them as assets, and those are things that, you know, quite frankly, haven't happened in the U.S. yet, and when that time does come, and it will come, those are going to be questions that we're all going to have answers to.
We will continue after this.
If you are enjoying this podcast, we invite you to subscribe. Visit our website at www.prospectsss.com. That's prospectsss.com. And follow us on Twitter at RethinkingF.
You mentioned that you're following a similar model to the way they've been doing it in Europe for a long time. But how do you think your team is developing a culture within the club to advance kids in the, or rather invest in kids in the academy for their professionalism?
Yeah, the idea of culture is a really good question. And I don't know that I necessarily have a real good answer for you from that standpoint, because I think what you'd find across the rest of the world is that culture is kind of an organic thing. You can have leadership in place that can kind of let that organic process take place, and maybe you can assist it, but I think it tends to be a little bit more kind of developed naturally, doesn't it? We're young at it. I think Portland's pretty unique because we really have a great, great fan base. We have an incredible culture around the first team. How do we build that culture down? How do we grow that culture down? Look, a great way to build that culture down is to move players through at some point, right? And then you begin to get this belief that, yeah, we have local players that can do it as well. But those players have to earn it, too, and it's not easy. So I think culture and growing a culture aids that, but I think they work hand in hand, and I don't know if there's any real one way to do it. So I don't know that I have a great answer for you. You know, if so many of us romanticize about the Barcelona culture, man, well over 100 years in developing that culture. So we have a long way to go.
No, that's great. I think that's a really good explanation. I think you're absolutely right that with our teams being so young, relatively speaking, compared to the culture that's been established in Europe and in Spain, that, you know, it takes a while to get there. And speaking of Spain, you know, the academy system there begins at U8 and it goes up to U19. And they work also within a promotion and relegation system, both for first teams and for the academies as well. And that promotion relegation system, as you know, it operates independently between the first teams or professional teams and the academy. So I'm wondering if we had a promotion and relegation system here in the U.S. for the academies, how do you think that might improve development for players?
Well, I think competition is essential to develop players to the highest level. So if we believe that promotion and relegation is a way of bettering competition or making competition stronger for the youth players, I'm all for it. It's an interesting question, because would that promotion relegation, is that a top-down thing or is that a bottom-up thing? And I don't have the answer to that. I don't know where you start the promotion relegation question. I think there's been some really good strides made and some good initiatives recently within the Development Academy and MLS as far as having Double Pass come in, and Double Pass doing a complete audit on all the academies. So now you're going to begin to get some standards set, or greater standards set, because I think the Development Academy, when they began the program, did a really good job of setting some standards. But I think with Double Pass now, they're going to come in, they're going to say, okay, this is the way things are done in the rest of the world. How can we ramp it up a little bit? How can we take some of those criteria and begin to, I don't want to say rate, but to begin to kind of analyze each of the academies across the country. Could that lead to some kind of a tiering system within our country? You know, is it just within the DA, or does it go further than that? I don't know. But I think perhaps that tiering could become a basis for something more that may look a little bit more like promotion and relegation. And I'm all for that, because if you're really talking about elite player development, well, it's in my mind, it's really important to get elite players, the best of the best, together, training together regularly in the best environment possible. And I think that those are some of the ingredients, you know, to develop this elite player that we keep talking about. And I think there's some initiatives in the works to make that better. Is that exactly promotion and relegation? Maybe not, but it may look a little more like a tiering, because promotion and relegation is kind of a natural way to give you tiering. So maybe we're going a roundabout way to get there.
So if we made that change, how would that affect the way academy coaches look for players?
It's a good question. I think the way academy coaches or MLS academy coaches look for players, it's a trickle-down effect. What is the first team looking for? So each of the MLS academies have player profiles. So we know what we want to look for already. I don't know that promotion relegation necessarily changes what we're looking for. Perhaps it changes the place where you look for those players, but I don't know that it changes what you look for in the player, because every club around the world has their particular ideas of what type of player fits their club. You know, and again, we're young at it, so we're looking at our player profiles, and we have an idea of what type of player fits our particular club. And then, in my mind, my job is also to develop an entree of players, because I do think those profiles change. You know, those profiles change as head coaches change, and so those things are pretty fluid. So while we have our idea of player profile, I think we also need to be developing a broad base of players as well, an entree of players as those profiles change. So going back to promotion and relegation, I think it improves the competitive base. It may improve the competitive platform, but I don't know that it changes what you're looking for in a player, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. That makes complete sense. Talking about the academy system here in the U.S. and how it's evolving, can you talk a bit about, as it has grown, how teams and how coaches see players as assets?
Yeah, I think we're learning in this country that the role of an academy coach under the guidance of an academy director, it's more than just being this technical guy on the field. It is for all clubs. You know, I was going to say for the MLS academies, there is a business relationship, of course, right? Because you're investing in these players. The MLS clubs are funding them. But I'm going to also say the youth clubs, the youth academies are doing the same, because whether you like it or not, in this country, youth soccer is a business. So I think we are learning now that our roles as academy directors, as academy coaches, are greater than simply being this soccer guy. We have to also understand the business models behind what we're doing, because the money does help to drive the programs, right? So how do we take an academy player that you have, let's say you bring him into your program at 10 years old, and you have him in your program for 6-8 years, how do we not only look at this player as a person, as a player, but we also need to look at this person as a business asset, because we've made an investment in that player. So I believe that things are changing quickly here in the U.S. where we're beginning to look at these players as assets. If you take MLS right now, this past year, I believe it was, I think it was a first, where there have been homegrown rights for players within one MLS team negotiated to go to another MLS team. And for me, that's developing an asset now. Okay, so for instance, maybe we develop a player within the Portland Timbers, and we'll go back to these profile ideas. Maybe we develop a player within the Portland Timbers Academy who doesn't necessarily fit the profile of what we want for, you know, pick a position. However, he might fit the profile perfectly of another MLS club. Well, now that player's an asset. So now there can be a negotiation, and it can be a win-win for both clubs. I think we're headed in that direction. I was really glad to see this last cycle here, that's beginning to happen. I think that's a great thing. I think it's a great thing for the MLS clubs. I think it's a great thing for the players. Because in the end, if we look at players as an asset, it also grows opportunities for players.
You mentioned the homegrown rules. Can you tell us more about that and what the impact of these rules are on teams and on player development as well?
Sure. And I'll try to do it as simply as I can. Sometimes the rules can be a little bit too complex. Well, I shouldn't say too complex. Maybe they're as complex as they need to be, but I don't necessarily understand all of them all the time. So I'll try to keep it simple. The homegrown, each MLS club has homegrown territory based on both distance and population. Okay, so you try to balance out the different regions in the country, you know, and I'll keep this really simple. If my region has 100 players scattered over 3 different states, and another region has 100 players within 5 miles of the stadium, of that team's stadium, you tend to balance things out with your homegrown territory. So I'm going to have five states to get to those 100 people, and another club is going to have 5 miles to get to those 100 people. Okay, so that's the homegrown territory. So different clubs have different homegrown territories. In Portland, we have Idaho, Oregon, and a small piece of Vancouver, Washington. So we have a larger homegrown territory to get to those numbers. Chicago was 75 mile radius of Toyota Park, the stadium there. So I hope that's an illustration of what the homegrown territories can look like. Each of those markets are different, right? So the 75 miles of Toyota Park, there's different player pool than Oregon, Idaho. So that affects how people look for players. For instance, if I have LA's territory or I have New York's territory, there may be no need for me to look outside my homegrown territory or my homegrown region. There may be no need for me to look outside of that region for players. Whereas if I have a much more limited homegrown pool of players, I may have to look outside of my territory to find players. So where can I look outside my territory? I can look in unclaimed homegrown territory. Okay, so there, until Miami is fully in the league, for instance, Southern Florida is in unclaimed territory at the moment. So you see a lot of MLS clubs looking for talent in South Florida. And you'll find players on my roster from South Florida. You'll find players in Atlanta and Dallas. You'll find players from South Florida on many MLS clubs' rosters. They are they're from unclaimed territories. So if they are in my academy for at least 1 year, training with us for at least 1 year, meeting all the minimum requirements of the homegrown rules, they can actually be signed to a homegrown contract. So what it does is it affects where you look for players outside of your homegrown region. So that's kind of an explanation of what the homegrown rule is and how it affects the players that we try to identify. From the standpoint of opportunity for players, the homegrown rules provide incentives for the clubs to sign homegrown players. Incentives include salary cap relief, roster space, et cetera. So there are certain incentives to sign homegrown players. So, yeah, is it a benefit for me? Is it a benefit for a player to be a player with professional aspirations? Is there a benefit for that player to be in an MLS academy and to be on a homegrown list? Sure, because there's incentives for that player to be signed. And any incentive to be signed professional is just a help for a player because it's so difficult to get there as it is. So that's an idea on the homegrown rule and how it affects what we do.
This concludes this episode of Rethinking Football. We hope that you'll join us for the next one.
This episode is brought to you by PSS International Academy. Research shows that in sports, the one thing that works and makes lower performing players better is immersion. To learn about our programs and how you can play federated football in Spain, visit prospectss.com and click on International Academies. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at RethinkingF. Rethinking Football's theme song, Actionable, is courtesy of bensound.com. To access the transcript of this podcast and other archives, please visit our website, www.prospectss.com, and click on Podcasts. That is prospectss.com.